buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, it's overtime with William Pattison, Dawson Wise, and Jace Brown joining you on a Monday, a victory Monday after both the Diamond Vols and Basketball Vols got some big wins over the weekend. Plenty to talk about. We're all back in studio now.
Yes.
Last week, the cold kind of got me, and y'all've got things going on as well. Couldn't all get back in here, but now we are on a Monday. Happy to be back, and a lot to talk about in this hour. We'll talk about the Diamond Vols extending their winning streak over Bowling Green this week. As always, we'll give our best bets at the end of the hour. But we begin with the biggest storyline of the weekend and probably one of the best games of the season. That's the Tennessee Volunteers surfing the tide in Tuscaloosa. You like that one?
Like
good
that.
Headline. Yeah, there we go. After its early 11-point lead became a 7-point second-half deficit Saturday night at number 13 Alabama, the fourth-ranked Tennessee Vols stormed back to claim its second top 15 win of the week in a 81-74 triumph over the Alabama Crimson Tide. In a matchup of the conference's co-lead, fourth-ranked Tennessee, who now improves to 23-6 and 13-3 in SEC play, got a team-best 18 points from junior guard Zakai Ziegler at a sold-out Coleman Coliseum. The Crimson Tide had won 16 straight SEC games in the building, which held College Game Day earlier in the afternoon for the first time ever. I don't know if y'all saw, they brought out Jalen Milroe.
Yeah.
He was trying to figure out if he's going to do a half-court shot with the basketball or football. Didn't hit any of them. So
Unsurprising.
Now, we laugh, but if Joe Milton did it, it probably would have been in the second.
Been in the upper deck at
yeah,
TBA.
Yeah, the upper deck. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ziegler scored 13 of his 18 points in the second half and co-paced Tennessee with four assists in the game. Fifth-year guard Dalton Kinect tallied 13 points, his second lowest total in SEC play. He battled foul trouble but hit a key jump shot with 2:30 left to triple the lead. And after allowing the Crimson Tide to start off 6 of 8 from the field, including 2 of 4 from behind the arc in the first 5.5 minutes of the second half, Tennessee held their opponent to a 3 of 21 mark from the floor. Alabama is KenPom's top-ranked offense in the country, as we covered on Friday. They missed all 13 of its three-point attempts during that time against the stingy Tennessee defense. A couple other guys we want to highlight, junior forward Jonas Adu. Only played 23 minutes. He got in foul trouble as well. Finished with 12 points, but all but two came in the second half and seven rebounds as well. Fifth-year guard Josiah Jordan James, who tipped out a missed free throw in the closing seconds, leading to Ziegler's game-clinching shots at the line. He totaled 11 points and a season-best 13 rebounds. Great stuff, JJJ, on the boards, just one shy of his career high to lead all players. He also shot 3 of 6 from three-point range. Jordan Ganey, 9 points. Jamai Meshack, a guy we'll talk about here in a minute, really big game for him, posted 8 to go along with a season-high tying 6 rebounds and a co-team best 4 assists to tie his season best. On Alabama's side, Mark Sears, a guy averaging 21 points a night coming into the game, led all scorers with 22, but Tennessee limited him to a 2 of 8 clip from long range. A team that shoots a lot of threes, we knew where they were going to put a lot of them up. You were able to defend their best guy in Sears, holding him to just 25%. I'll begin with my takeaways. I tweeted out on Saturday after the game, I think this was the most impressive win of the season. Kentucky was awesome. Auburn, you're at home. You find a way to come back and win that game. But this game, I felt like, was one of the biggest ones under Rick Barnes in the last 5 years in terms of a regular season SEC matchup. And you go on the road and face the number one offense in the country, and you're trailing in the second half. Once again, a familiar territory in these last three games. You know, you're trailing against Missouri, trailing against Auburn. Trailing on the road is a different story, however, especially against a team that's a lot better than Missouri. And you're able to get it done. And you're able to get it done not through Dalton Kinect, but other guys on this roster who have played valuable roles this whole season and have played valuable minutes in their careers. They know how to step up in these moments. And Jermaine Mashak was one of the main guys in that group. You know, Josiah Jordan-James as well. He, 11 points. That's all we need from him, right? And Vescovi had a couple of really key steals, really key defensive stops. Was able to find a couple of buckets from the three-point line as well. Overall, I think this was the best team win of the season. A really tough opponent. Don Connect wasn't just taking over the game all the whole time. You were able to find a team win. And to me, I think that says a lot about this team going forward, that you're able to win on the road in a very hostile environment with the SEC regular season crown on the line, and you're able to get it done. Look, you know, winning the SEC tournament is awesome, but winning the SEC regular season tournament, I think, speaks volumes to what this team is. It's basically a three-month round robin. And it's, 18 games. There are ebbs and flows of every season. Tennessee has been consistent throughout it. And I think in the ability to go on the road and get this done, most impressive win of the season. We'll dive into more of the storylines going on in this game a little later. But, guys, I want to hear from you, your takeaways from this big win.
Well, the first one for me is more of a kind of a second-half takeaway, a defensive masterpiece.
Yes.
I mean, this was incredible defense, arguably one of the best defensive efforts under Rick Barnes, in my opinion. I know that's a stretch, but I saw a stat. Alabama did not have a field goal from the floor the last 9 minutes of regulation. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, to hold the number one offense in their own building, on their own floor, to no buckets the last 9 minutes. It was incredible, an incredible effort, especially in the second half. They adjusted well. I thought in the first half the defense was kind of shaky. Alabama was kind of doing whatever they wanted to. Sears had a pretty good first half, and they just were kind of making shots, making us work, got us in foul trouble, but they stayed resilient on defense and really got the job done. And man, every time Alabama would come down the floor, they did everything that we've talked about. Perimeter defense was great. Paint defense was great. They flew around. They made plays. This was not the timid defensive team that went on the road to Missouri a couple weeks ago. The timid defensive team, you know, that's been on the road several times this year to Georgia and to Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. This was a team that was fully confident in its abilities when they are very, very dangerous. So incredible defensive effort. Credit to Barnes' scheme for this game, especially the adjustments they made in the second half. Resilience in game. We've talked about it on this show. You just mentioned it, how we've seen them be able to turn a bad stretch of games into a good stretch, but haven't been able to do it within the span of the same game. And they did that on Saturday. Finally got an opportunity to go into the break down 7, mm-hmm. And have to come out and respond. And respond they did in a huge way. Massive response, especially over the first about 12 minutes of the second half, to take control of the game and force Alabama to have to be desperate. It was great to see. It was great to see that they can do it. It's a confidence booster, and that was huge for them. Finding different ways to win, like you said. I think we all fully kind of expected Dalton Connect to have a big night. I did, especially after the overrated chance on game day. I'm sure we all saw that clip. I kind of expected him to have a big night, but he didn't, and he didn't need to. It's like Kentucky. You found another way to win. You found a win where you got everybody involved. A lot of double-figure scoring, a lot of spreading the ball around, moving it around, doing different things on offense, and it was really great. Even with Connect on the floor, you weren't going to him every possession. Sometimes he'd draw a defender. You'd have a mismatch. You'd be able to score that way. So it was really great to, again, see that this team can win as a team. They don't need Dalton Connect to score 40 points to win games. They don't even need a guy to score 20 points to win games. Mm-hmm. Ziegler goes for 18, and you win the game anyway. So that's huge as well. And then the last one for me, a big win on the road. Barnes teams have struggled on the road historically. They, especially in these big moments now, you add a win at Rupp and you add a win in Tuscaloosa in two of the biggest games of the year, and suddenly this team doesn't look so bad away from home. So really huge effort, really great second half, and great win for the Vols.
Yeah, my two main ones here, being calm under pressure. You know, you come out swinging out of the gate, you get up pretty good early, and then to end that first half, you know, Alabama goes on some sort of run where Tennessee just can't buy a basket, and you're down at the half whenever you were up by, I think, 10-plus at some point in the first half. You know, that's sort of a big pressure. Then, like you said, you get down by 7 late in the game, and you're kind of like, okay, we got to figure things out. they did just that. They didn't try to force anything. They played the game at their pace. They controlled the tempo the entire night in that second half. So that was a really impressive thing that I saw. And another thing that we've hit on, role players in this one played really well. Jordan Ganey had a huge first half to sort of stop Alabama from really pulling away early. Mayshak was by far the most impactful guy on the floor all night. We'll talk about him in a minute. And Triple J just played out of his mind, was all over the court on the defensive end and around the rim, being able to take down 13 rebounds, like you said, second most in his career, and shot pretty well from distance, too. 3 from 6, hit a really tough basket late in the game to extend the lead to, I think, by 5. I remember listening to that on my way home from my play-by-play. I was like, man, that might be the play of the night besides the Mayshak fiasco. But, man, role players stepped up and being calm under pressure. This team can make a run with that.
Yeah, look, in a matchup of two vaunted offensive attacks, both sides under 40% on the night. But Tennessee took 3 more three-pointers, all of which were makes. They finished 12 of 40. Tennessee put up 40 threes. And I really was not upset about it, and this is why. You know, on Friday, when it was here, Max and I here, you know, I was talking about you're going to have to try and counter their offensive attack.
Yeah.
You know they're going to put up a high volume of threes. Mm. They're going to get their fair share regardless. You've got to try and find a way to match it. And I wasn't necessarily saying chuck up 40 threes, but you've got to find a way to at least where the differential you know isn't like a 5-12 differential favoring Alabama in the three-point line. And instead, they win the differential 12 threes to Alabama's 9 of 37. So that was really impressive. And the Vols also forced 12 turnovers plus 6 in the turnover differential. And the Vols held the number one offense in the country to their two lowest point totals this season. So this is a team that, even against the best, even on the road, is still getting it done. How big was the Vols' defense down the stretch?
It was huge, and it was especially huge because you weren't in your own building. I would fully expect an effort like this at home at Food City Center. I would not expect an effort like this on the road. Mm-hmm. To stifle them to this degree was really cool to be on the road, because in this kind of game with the crowd as raucous as it was all night, and it got up a few times in that game, a couple buckets late in this one, I mean, could have snowballed it for
yeah.
Alabama.
Yeah.
Especially within the last 5 minutes, it felt like you know you come down, you take a three, you miss. All of a sudden, Bama's got the ball down two, but you play good enough defense. They never found a way to get that big bucket. They never found it to kind of get them back in the game and get the crowd back in the game, and you really stifled them there. Because of that, you're able to control the pace, dictate the flow, which is something we always talk about with this team. They love to play the game their way, and when they do, they're especially successful. You converted your defense into offensive opportunities. You didn't get to a point where you needed to have offense to overcome defense. It was more your defense just led to you can settle in. You know, okay, we can go get a bucket. We can stretch the lead to 6.
Yeah.
And that's huge as well, being able to play from ahead. You were able to settle in on the road. And you forced bad shots. You made them uncomfortable. Man, Mark Sears, the last, like, 8 minutes of that game, just did not look comfortable. He took several threes from almost out at the logo just because he kind of felt like he had to, I think. There was one, I don't know if we were up 2 or up 5 at this point, might have been right after the connect bucket, that they kind of move around for a little bit. Sears comes to the top, grabs it off the handoff, and just hucks it from about the logo.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, you're playing good enough defense that you're forcing them to just kind of start taking desperation looks. Mm-hmm. So that was huge. You made them uncomfortable, which is always something we talk about. You were aggressive, up in their face, and did not allow them to settle in at all on offense. So it was massive.
Yeah, it was huge, especially late in the game. Once you finally get up and you take the pressure off yourself and you put it on the Crimson Tide, and like you said, they just couldn't buy a basket for those last 9 minutes besides some garbage time layups where Tennessee rightfully avoided putting a foul on Mark Sears, sending him to the line for more. So, I mean, good on them for that. But, I mean, being able to, you know, lock down that perimeter late in the game, I think they went, what, 2 of 17 for three in the second half. So, just abysmal showing from the Crimson Tide late. But forcing them, like you said, Dawson, into the horrible shots, the desperation heaves, is huge, especially when you're trying to keep that momentum rolling in late, when they're trying to claw back into the thing. I mean, forced 12 turnovers. That's a huge thing. Sears had four. I know we caused seven earlier this year against him, so putting some more pressure on him was big. And just peskiness from, like you said, Vescovy had a couple big ones. Meshack was all over the floor. We're about to get to him. And Ziegler, as always, getting hands in everything. It was just great to see this team at the end of the game rely on that defense that we've known to come and love and pull away just because of that.
Yeah, during the game, I've got a lot of Alabama friends, but I've decided to text one that, you know, might be able to formulate a sentence a little bit better at the time. And he was talking about, you know, he was frustrated with their shot selection. I was like, man, y'all are just forcing it. And yeah. I felt late game, you know, you live and die by the three, I get it, but I felt like they were just forcing that narrative in a sense. A lot of bad shots, and, you know, that helps Tennessee out because you're forcing them to take those bad shots. But I also think it goes on Alabama. Some of the shot selection they took late game, I thought really kept them out of it and kept them from making any advances. Something to note, going into the game, Tennessee was allowing opponents on the road to complete 37.2% of their three-point attempts. You hold them, and this is one of the best teams in the country for shooting from three, to 24.3%. That's a 13-point differential right there, a really big number, and I think it just speaks volumes to how you were able to, A, force them to take bad shots, rush shots, but also get a contest. Only one open shot three allowed on Saturday. And, you know, we've talked about that stat a couple of times on here. And sometimes it's been 7 and 8 and 6, higher numbers. Against the best one, you hold them to one. It's all about getting a contest, and the numbers will reflect themselves after you're able to get those contests, and that's exactly what happened on Saturday. Now, I want to talk about a guy that was also involved in that defensive just barrage, I guess, if you will, by the Vols. Jemai Meshack played 27 minutes on Saturday, scoring 8 points. Including a 2-of-2 clip from the three-point line. Meshack was also one of the main pieces in this stifling defense. I think this is his best game of the season. To the casual basketball fan, to the Bleacher Report ESPN app fan, that it doesn't jump off the, you know, jump off the page. But if you watch the game, you saw his impact. And all 27 of those minutes were very impactful for the Vols. Will this go down as the Jemai Meshack game?
It could. Honestly, I mean, heck, when you're getting a term coined after a game where you see people talking about getting Meshacked in this game.
Voldemort.
Even Rick Barnes is using the term. They asked him about it in his postgame press conference, and he was trying to define it himself. So when that happens, you've done something right, and he definitely did on both ends of the floor. It's a growing list of really quietly impressive performances for him. I mean, always been a defensive asset, but in this game, a couple times when you needed a bucket, like when you desperately needed a bucket, he found you one. There were a couple, especially his two threes.
Oh, yeah.
Both on possessions that looked like they were going to kind of be, you know, lost possessions. You were going to turn the ball over. You were going to run the shot clock out. And you just kick it out to an open Meshack, and, well, he drained it. A couple times there was one in the corner, especially. We'd swung it around. We'd missed a couple shots, get it back, and Meshack's open. There's like 5 seconds on the shot clock, and he buries it and extends the lead. And so he was huge on both ends, back-breaking shots to kind of bail us out a couple times. He almost became a spark plug. I mean, we talk about Jordan Ganey in that role, and he had a good night doing that as well. But Meshack did that a few times on both ends of the floor. Kept you in it, and then helped keep that lead when you were out in front late and played some really great defense, which is what he's out there to do, playing especially on Sears. I thought he was excellent when he was matched up top on Mark Sears. So on both ends, big-time spark plug, big-time game for him. And, yeah, I think it could go down as the Jemai Meshack game.
I think by far, to this point in his career, I think this is absolutely the Meshack game. I mean, listening to the radio call on my way back, I heard Bert Bertelkamp just raving off of Jemai Meshack and the big night he has. I missed pretty much the whole first half while I was calling some basketball myself, but started listening, and, man, every time down the court you'd hear Meshack poked one away, Meshack just taking over on the defensive end. So hearing that from Bertelkamp and Kessling as well, nagging on him, which was really awesome to hear as well. And, I mean, he's a kind of guy that, you know, he's not making these stat sheet plays, but his presence presence is known on the court on both ends, especially on Saturday. Like you said, Dawson made some really big shots, including the three that took the lead for the Vols back late in the game, and then immediately goes for that steal right after that puts Adu within an and-one opportunity. Just humongous swing for the Vols just because of him. So him being able to make that sort of impact in off the bench is huge for this team, especially when, you know, Jordan Ganey had a big first half but ended up only shooting like 2 for 9 from the field. And, of course, as we know, Dalton Connect didn't have his best game. So seeing a guy like him step up on both ends like that is just a huge step for this team, especially when it's coming to seeding nationally. You take games like this, you put that into account. Hey, you know, the best guy on the team is having an off night, but they rely on, like, the first guy off the bench. He only puts up 8 points, but, man, he's all over the court. I mean, this changes everything postseason-wise for the Vols, in my opinion.
Yeah, 865-546-8200, talking Tennessee and Alabama. Yeah, Mayshak, incredible. And I think, again, it's not going to stick out in the stat sheet, but I think to the people that watch the game, they will understand how big of an impact he was. And we've talked all year, you know, who's going to be the guy that steps up tonight? We've seen Tobe Awaka as of late being that guy that steps up. We've seen, you know, Jordan Ganey, Josiah Jordan James, Vescovi, all these guys have had their games. I think this was the Mayshak game, and it came at a very timely, in a very timely manner. Great performance from him. The Vols notched a second straight come-from-behind victory against a top 20 team, this time on the road. And this was in the last week. You know, we had Auburn here in Rocky Top on, what was it, Wednesday? Wednesday. And then you follow it up on Saturday with the other Alabama team, and this one being the Crimson Tide. Get it done in both ways. You're trailing. You find a way to win. What does this prove about the Vols?
Well, they're never fully out of it. Whereas I feel like previous teams kind of had the problem where, you know, if it gets to about double digits, you know, it felt like the game was over.
Yeah.
I mean, even last year, the FAU game in the tournament, when they got up by 12 or 14 points, game was over. Yeah. I mean, they didn't have the offense with the scoring droughts the way they were. They just didn't have the firepower to get back into a game. This team does. Now they've done it twice in 7 days, really twice in 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and especially once on the road against that kind of offense, this team is never fully out of any game, in my opinion. You're just waiting on that spark to get them back in it, waiting on that first step to get them back in it. They're never fully out of it. They don't have to rely on the defense anymore. Kind of goes hand in hand with when this team got down by double digits, you know, it felt like you couldn't really get back in it. This team can just will their way back into a game offensively, and their defense can help that as well. They're a much more balanced team, and that helps contribute to that also. And they're not scared of the moment. Look, I think this team almost plays better in the brighter light situations. In these bigger games, at Rupp, at Alabama, home against Auburn. You got a couple more big ones coming up that we expect them to be up for as well. Yeah. This team is almost even better in those games than they are in just their regular run-of-the-mill conference games, regular run-of-the-mill non-conference games. I feel like this team steps up in the moment rather than fading when the lights are on them the brightest, and that's going to be huge in the postseason because the lights only get brighter from here.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, huge to see that they can do this back-to-back games and step up to the moment.
Yeah, I think I'll go back to my point earlier. Calm under pressure. I mean, this team going down early comes back, facing adversity against a really tough both Auburn and Alabama team, and just willing your way to win in these late-game situations. I mean, you're going to run into that in the tournament. Just about every game, you're going to be running into adversity at some point. So being able to overcome that hump late in the year, when we're about, 2 weeks from March Madness, and, you know, it's just huge for them to start building that momentum right now. Like you said, Dawson, they're not going to back down from anybody. They're going to be right in your face, and they can play and can – after Saturday, I think they can beat anybody in the country when everybody's clicking. When you've got your role guys working, even with an off night from one of your starters, you're still very much in any game that you're playing in. So I think with this team right now, I think they should be circled on any bracket that they're in. I think this team could end up being the team to beat come March Madness.
What I think this proves is that they're a top four team and maybe better. Look, the good teams, they win at home. They battle on the road, but usually fall. The great teams are able to go on the road and win and play the same way they will at home. And that's really what Tennessee did on Saturday. Now, it wasn't the prettiest at times, in particular that first half. But that second half, I think, is one of the best halves of basketball Tennessee has played this season, at least defensively. And you got production across the board offensively, so I liked it from that aspect. But defensively, I thought you saw your best 20 minutes of the season against the best offense in the country. And I think that proves this is a top four team. And we're about to dive into the seeding. But I think, I mean, when you look at Tennessee's just resume this season, I think it has continued to get better. You've continued to learn something each week about this team. And, you know, of course, there's a couple of bad losses sprinkled in there. But you've learned something about this team each week, each month. And I think right now, this is the best version of Tennessee you've seen this season. And when you look at years past, it was, all right, Tennessee's really hot in January. And then it's kind of holding on to that January by a thread as the year goes on. February, it's like, well, we were really good in January. You know, we were good. And then come March, you're just still kind of hanging on, wishing you could get back to where you were. Now, this team seems to get better each week. And it's now you're the best version of yourself each time you go out. I think that says a lot about this team. And back-to-back wins, trailing against two really good coaches, by the way, Bruce Pearl and Nate Oates, really good teams, and you're able to get it done in both an on-the-road and at-home environment. The Vols currently rank fifth in the net and boast six quad one wins. Do the Vols deserve a number one seed?
Yes. They're the more convincing team, in my opinion, than Arizona has been over the course of the year, and the resume speaks for itself, and I'm going to let it do that because I saw this rundown of Arizona versus Tennessee this year on their resume, and I think it speaks for itself. Arizona's ranked wins number 10 Duke and number 14 Alabama. Earlier in the year, they played in non-conference. Tennessee's ranked wins number 13 Illinois, number 24 Florida, number 14 Alabama twice now, once at home, once on the road. Number 11 Auburn and number 16 Kentucky on the road. Obviously, still have that game this weekend against Kentucky at home. The losses for Arizona: Purdue, which is a common loss to Tennessee. FAU, ranked 40th currently in the KenPom rankings. Stanford at 113, which is arguably probably their worst loss of the year to this point.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not. Washington State twice, and Oregon State, who's 156th in the KenPom rankings.
Oregon State's not good at basketball.
Here are the Tennessee losses: Purdue, Kansas, North Carolina, Mississippi State, who's 30th in KenPom, might end up being a tournament team. South Carolina, again, you play them this week, and A&M, who's 54th in the KenPom. If that doesn't speak for itself, I don't know what does. The Vols' resume is better.
So yeah. your worst loss is a KenPom 54th team, correct?
A KenPom 54 team that could still theoretically make the tournament, yeah.
Versus the Oregon State Beavers, who are 159.
Exactly.
Yeah. It should not be a question, I think, at this point. I mean, like you said, Tennessee does have a couple weird losses on there. Like you said, Mississippi State and Texas A&M don't nearly stand out as much as the Oregon States and the Stanfords for Arizona. And I think the strength of schedule should also come into play. I think I saw where Tennessee is ranked fourth in strength of schedule right now, and Arizona's not really close to that at this moment, playing a pretty weak Pac-12, in my opinion, this year. So I think that should come into play, and just how Tennessee's been able to win those games convincingly. It's not like most of those games have been close ones like this these last couple weeks. Most of these ones at home, some on the road even, have been just wallopings by this team. So I think they're the more consistent team. They're losing to better teams when they are losing, and I think they're at right now catching their stride, playing their best basketball. I don't see why they aren't the one seed right now.
Yes, they do. Arizona, I think, is a very good team. But I think if you're going to compare the body of work, and that's what the committee's job is to do, it's to compare the body of work and what you've done throughout the season. I don't think you – and as you just – I mean, you just gave the best claim of them all. You just listed it out. I mean, they've got two losses in the, you know, sub-100 of KenPom. Tennessee's worst one is 54th. So that right there should say a lot. And Tennessee has beaten more ranked teams currently. And you could even throw in, if you want to throw in ranked teams at the time, you've got teams like Ole Miss in that mix as well. Now, I think Ole Miss is not a good team. But if you wanted to, you could. So I think, as you mentioned, Tennessee wins in the ranked wins category. The, I guess, better losses, if you will. I hate saying better losses, but and we got something coming in here from Jordan Moore. Tennessee's six losses combined have a 156 KenPom rating. This is awesome. Great stuff, Jordan. Tennessee's six losses combined have a 156 KenPom rating. Oregon State is 156.
There you go.
Just one loss is the same of Tennessee's six losses combined.
Well, throw another one on there. Common opponents. Arizona 0-1 versus Alabama. Tennessee 2-0 versus Alabama.
That's fair.
Yeah.
It speaks for itself. We don't even need to say anything else. I mean, the resume speaks for itself.
Yeah. I don't know if y'all saw today. Andy Katz, he must have woken up on the wrong side of the bed today. He had Iowa State over Tennessee today.
I saw that.
I did not see that.
Yeah, he had them at number four in Tennessee.
Was that like the power rankings?
The power 36 that he does every week.
Okay, power 36, I think that's just going off of momentum. But even still.
What momentum did they display when they were
I understand.
Tied with UCF.
I understand. I still think it's ridiculous. I just don't I don't think it relates to the AP poll. That's my only argument for it. But Iowa State shouldn't be touching Tennessee in that still.
I don't even in the power rankings though. You just went on the road and beat the number one offense.
That's very fair. Yeah.
The Knights are not the Knights are not Alabama.
No, they're not.
All right, good stuff, guys. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about the Diamond Vols, a big win for them, big series win, I should say, over Bowling Green when we come back here on Overtime.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
Rev up your savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive. Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
Are you tired of the same boring workouts that don't get you the results that you want? Check out HotWorks. With infrared light therapy and personalized wellness options, you'll be able to get the perfect workout every time. With the hot yoga or any of the other isometric options at HotWorks, you'll feel the detoxification right away. Hop on over to 10839 Hardin Valley Road or visit any of the other Knoxville locations to get started on your personalized journey.
A brand built in Tennessee and born from the love of the game. Inward Half revolutionizes golfing comfort. Crafted by a former pro and dedicated enthusiast just like you, our luxury performance wear guarantees you stay cool and comfortable through every swing and every day. We're not just a brand. We've set out to create a lifestyle for those who understand that impeccable style and premium performance are a hole-in-one. Enjoy the walk in. With Inward Half.
The best athletes don't just play the game, they change it. When it comes to investing, Gainbridge is doing the same. Their online platform does things differently because it's designed to put you in charge of growing your own savings. It's intuitive, it's easy, and best of all, it's on your terms. No wonder Gainbridge has earned the trust of 40% repeat customers. It's a better way to invest. Because it's investing your way. Get started today at gainbridge.io.
Back here on Overtime, I was trying to think of a creative way to come into the segment. Yeah, first things first. Well, see, it's not the first thing, sir. I guess second things second. We're talking Diamond Vols extending their winning streak this weekend. Another explosive offensive performance resulted in a 16-6 run rule win for number 7/8 Tennessee, whatever you want to refer to, in Sunday's series finale against Bowling Green at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. The Vols now improved to 11-1, completed their second consecutive series sweep and rank in their winning streak to 10 games with Sunday's victory. Since the start of the 2020 season, UT has swept 13 of its 15 non-conference home series. The Big Orange set the tone early with a 4-run first inning and added 5 more in the second to race out to a 9-2 lead. They finished with a season-high 17 base hits thanks to multi-hit efforts from 4 different players. Cannon Peebles and Dalton Bargo led the charge with 3 hits apiece while combining for 4 RBIs and 4 runs scored on the day. Dylan Dreiling also had a productive afternoon at the plate, posting a career-best 4 RBIs on 2 hits, including a 3-run homer in Tennessee's 5-run second inning. Ethan Payne had a career-high 2 hits and drove in a run as well. The Vols used 8 different pitchers in the game, with Kirby Connell picking up the win after an impressive inning of work. The veteran lefty entered the contest with runners on first and second with nobody out in the third, but escaped the jam unscathed with a ground out and a pair of strikeouts to strand 2 runners on base. The Vols scored 7 of their 16 runs with 2 outs and went 7-for-13 at the plate with 2 outs in the game. UT was also 10-of-16 with runners in scoring position. All of us had the chance to go watch the Diamond Vols this weekend. Mm-hmm. I guess we were all there on Saturday. Did you go to all the games this weekend?
No, only Saturday.
Only Saturday? Only
I
Saturday?
I went Friday and Sunday.
Friday and Sunday. Saturday. Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I went Saturday. Sat there in the what is it? Right field. Yeah, right field, over almost to the very end.
Standing room?
Yeah, standing room only. Not bad at all.
No, not at all.
The security guard threw me one of the balls. So I got a game ball. I gave it to the kids next to me. I'm probably too old to keep the ball. But that was my moment of the game. Anyway, a big weekend, another sweep, impressive. I think the offense continues to be the big storyline here. Now, I know you're playing against Bowling Green, and I know you're playing at home where it's a little bit easier to hit it out of the park. But the offense has been rolling consistently over this 10-game stretch. And I think that's my biggest takeaway from the weekend. You guys, Dawson, we'll begin with you. Takeaways from the sweep.
Well, number one is you've got a few guys that could contend for the Golden Spikes this year. Billy Amick being the main one. He is starting to make his case, in my opinion, of being the best player in the country, or at least one of them.
Yeah.
He's up to 7 home runs in 11 games as of all now. Another multi-homer weekend for him. Had one on Saturday while I was there that left the park in a hurry.
Yeah.
And just had an overall really great weekend of hitting, and multiple hits on Saturday, multi-hit games multiple times this weekend, and played well on defense. I know a lot of people, well, his weakness is his defense. Well, not really. Started, turned some double plays this weekend from third, played really sound fundamental defense. He's a well-rounded player, and he quickly is becoming the best transfer player in the country, I think by far, in terms of the impact he's had. Tiers as well, he's still up over 450 average early in the year. He had another good weekend of hitting, another good weekend out in right field as well. Continues to just really be a solid rock in that 4 spot. So good to see him doing well. And Blake Burke has his bat back.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Good to see. Hit a couple of homers on Saturday, the second of which I still don't think has landed yet. I don't know where that one ended up. But good to see him back, getting some action back in that bat after we kind of wondered where he had went. He gets moved back to the 2 spot this week and produces, so that's huge. Drew Beam is cooking. What a start on Saturday.
Yeah.
Gave up the first inning homer, which on an at-bat that probably should have ended in a strikeout. The pitch before, missed his spot on his pitch, but that's the only mistake he made. Mm-hmm. 9 strikeouts and 6 innings of work. Looked very good, had very good command, was fired up too, by the way. So a huge effort for him, had great command of his spots, was striking guys out, making guys look really, really bad. It folded a guy to his knees on a couple of those wipeout pitches in the middle of that effort. So good to see him being that number one piece in your rotation, being the Saturday anchor guy for that rotation. And the offense is still rolling. 39 runs in 3 games, which we'll get to talk about in a minute. Really impressive production, mashing the baseball, a ton of home runs, a ton of big hits. Still continue to just rotate runners into home plate, into home, it seems like. And at several guys that were producing at a really high level. So the offense is rolling, and another successful weekend.
Yeah, first thing for me is, at least on Sunday, Cannon Peebles finally found his rhythm.
Yes.
Early this year, he hasn't been the most effective up at the plate, but, man, he found it on Sunday, found a way to get on several times. I don't think he was out at all at the plate. I think he caught a walk and was 3-for-3 besides that. So a big day for him on Sunday. Blake Burke, like you said, is back. It was really great to see him start to find a rhythm. He hit a cracker of one off the left field wall yesterday's game for a double. It sounded like it was going to go out, but I don't think it got above about maybe 12 feet off the ground, so there was no chance it was, but it got to the wall in a hurry. So finally seeing him be back and in action like we've seen him over these last couple years is really good to see. Hopefully he can keep that rhythm going, especially since we're under 2 weeks from SEC play. Some of the young pitchers struggled a little bit on Sunday. That's not something to really worry about, but you know, we are getting close to when we're trying to figure out that weekend rotation stuff. So you know, Matthew Dallas didn't have the best day of his young career here. Dylan Loy struggled a little bit early but found a rhythm late. Marcus Phillips did look really good. He pitched 2 shutout innings, looked really solid. I think maybe gave up 1 hit, only faced seven batters, so the one base given up. But I think most of all, I think you found your third weekend rotation piece, and that being A.J. Causey. He threw lights out on Friday. I mean, up and down the lineup, nobody could really see him. I think he gave up like a second-inning home run, but besides that, he was just lights out. 9 strikeouts on the day on Friday. And, you know, the offense put him in a great position to be comfortable out there, which I think helps a lot. But, you know, with A.J. Russell out, he stepped up and looked right at home. So I think you might have found your last Sunday guy, if anything else, this weekend.
Yeah, quick note about Amick, was just awarded SEC Player of the Week today. Mm-hmm. Now the second Vol that has been named that award, A.J. Causey, was the SEC co-pitcher of the week. I guess we'll just, you know, throw that award and won. But a little bit more about Amick. Went a perfect 5-for-5 with 5 runs scored, 3 homers, and 5 RBIs in the first 2 games of this weekend sweep. He also ranks first on the team and is among the SEC leaders in numerous offensive categories, including hits with 17, home runs with 7, RBIs with 18, total bases with 42, and slugging percentage with .933.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you talk about an impact of a guy coming in and being that instant impact. Amick has been just that, a real home run hit, no pun intended, for Amick. Now, talking about this offense a little bit more, total 39 runs this weekend. Do you think it's more home cooking because of, you know, the way the layout is at Lindsey Nelson, or can we expect this all season?
I think you can start to expect it. You know, a couple of the teams in the past kind of felt like it lived and died by the homer. You know, you're either hitting a long ball or you weren't really scoring any runs. This team, it feels like, can kind of string together some base hits.
Yeah.
Not really have to rely on it. And even guys that were on those teams a couple of years ago have almost evolved. Blake Burke, especially, a couple of big doubles this weekend. Excuse me, over the course of these 3 games, just they're able to string hits together, keep guys on, keep the rotation moving, keep the lineup going through it. We batted around a couple times on Saturday. In the 6th, we batted around to get to the run rule limit. So, you know, these guys don't have to hit a home run or bust anymore. They can string it together. And we saw that in Houston in the opening series. When you weren't at Lindsey Nelson Stadium, they were still able to score at a relatively high rate. Now, had some problems leaving guys on base, but they started to shore those up. But they showed that they can score in other ways. You know, Lindsey Nelson's going to contribute to some scoring. It's naturally a hitter's ballpark. It's a short park. I don't think it helped a ton this weekend because, I mean, many of these home runs, I mean, these guys are hitting bombs.
Yeah, they're leaving anywhere.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to get at is, I mean, these are going to be out in most ballparks. Some of these would have been out in Omaha where you had to hit it 380 to the right field pole. I mean, so I don't think it helped that much. It's going to contribute later in the year. You're going to have some wall scrapers, but there were certainly none over the course of this weekend. Most every team's going to be better in their home ballpark. That's just how the sport is. But this team has shown, I think, at least based on what we saw in Houston, they might just be able to take some of that success on the road.
Yeah, I'm also leaning long-term here just because, I mean, like you said, in Arlington, this team put together, besides that one – slip up against Oklahoma. They put together some really big hits, had some deep homers in a professional ballpark there too. So I don't think the power is in question. But I really like your point there of, you know, this team finds a way to, you know, play maybe a little bit of small ball, not per se bunting, but, you know, putting singles together, putting together long innings where you're drawing it out, you're getting guys on base and you're knocking them in with a double here and there. And, you know, those runs do tally up pretty quickly. So I think that's one strength of this team. But again, I think overall, this team can do it elsewhere. I don't think it really matters. I think it's really going to showcase whenever we play Alabama here in a couple weeks. I feel like that's going to be a fun start to the SEC play, and I think it's going to be warm enough. The bats are going to stay warm, and I think it'll translate on the road. And, you know, I was taking a peek throughout the weekend at some of the roster mix-ups that they've had, and, you know, some of the lineups that I played with in my head just kind of sounded really nice, you know, so much so that I would maybe rival it with the 2022 season where, you know, there's bashers at any point in the lineup. So I think that's one thing that this team does have for the offense is, you know, power that can go anywhere as well as averages that can go anywhere.
Yeah. You know, one of the things coming into the year that was a question was who's going to be that Sunday starter. Now we've gotten about 3 weeks of ball now played. Have we made any progress to finding a Sunday starter now? I know you were talking about Causey being that guy. Dawson, do you agree with that move?
I do. Is it fair to say we may have taken, other than Causey, but like the guys that started yesterday, is it fair to say we took a little bit of a step backwards? Seacrest got banged up a little bit
Seacrest
yesterday.
Did get banged up.
Schaefer looked okay, but again had a problem finding the strike zone.
Matthew Dallas
had a big problem finding the strike zone. And I don't know if it's just because maybe they brought him in a weird spot kind of in the third inning after Benke throws two-thirds of an inning and gets the hook. That maybe he just kind of threw off his rhythm a little bit, not starting, but you kind of took a step backwards. I do agree that Causey probably earned the spot, but I'm surprised we did not see Snead. And I'm wondering now if they're saving him for tomorrow night against Kansas State, possibly.
Yeah.
Pretty big non-conference game. I would not be surprised to see him get the ball there. Maybe that's what the goal was. But I figured he would at least see some action yesterday, and he didn't. We didn't see him. And so that was kind of tough. I thought he was going to be that third guy. But you know what? I think you found him. I think he's right. I think I said Causey a few weeks ago before, you know, right after we saw him come after A.J. Russell, I said I think he should still be the Sunday guy. And he proved it the other night going seven innings. Really nice outing from him.
Yeah. One thing that I heard from Coach Vitello on Friday night in the little presser was, you know, all the guys on the team, especially during spring ball and fall ball, said that he said that the team voted him the hardest at bat of any pitcher on that roster. And, you know, it showed itself on Friday where, I mean, he's mowing guys down and is confident up there. You know, he brings that weird submarine action while he's just standing almost straight up the whole time. It's a funky look and, you know, it works. So I think maybe throwing that out there, I think you could throw that at a Sunday, maybe interchange him with Russell, especially this weekend when you have a chance to get Russell some extra rest, maybe before throwing him out there, maybe keep Causey at the Friday, throw Russell at the Sunday. See what you can mix up in that weekend rotation. I think there could be some really solid pieces. Again, like you said, Dawson, Snead would have been fun to see, but I have a good feeling we're going to see him for a decent chunk tomorrow night against Kansas State. So still some things that we need to see out of him, but I think he can also make a push for that role as well.
The one thing I question, though, A.J. Russell, obviously your Friday guy. I kind of like Causey following him up, though. You know, I know Causey is a starting level pitcher, but I kind of like the 1-2 punch they've got with the two AJs, and it's worked so far this season. Now Russell was obviously out on Friday, but I really like that 1-2 punch, and I feel like if you're able to kind of figure out maybe a collection of guys on Sunday, like I like throwing Snead later on a Sunday where, you know, he's throwing heat, the guys are a little bit more tired from the long weekend, kind of already thinking about going home. I think that could be a good angle. Or also, you could maybe throw Snead in after Russell and put Causey as a starter on Sunday. I think those are a couple of scenarios you could possibly do. But I do like what the two AJs do back-to-back. So that is one thing I would say about that. But you could add in Snead in place of Causey on Friday. I think there are a lot of ways you can interchange it, and that's why we're still, you know, ahead of SEC conference play. We can have these scenarios and still try to figure things out. I think also yesterday it was Vitello just kind of testing some things out.
I think so, too.
And it's not very normal. You see eight pitchers in a game against Bowling Green on a Sunday. I think he was just trying to figure out, okay, let's see who's working. Let's see what's let's give a couple of these guys an opportunity. Obviously, Dallas, not his best day, but he's still young and kind of got thrown off maybe with having those many guys in front of him. So, again, early on the season, we can have these conversations. I think we're definitely making progress, though, at least having a couple of guys that are hitting and look really good, like a Causey. So we'll just have to see how this storyline goes throughout the season. When we come back, we'll give our best bets of the night. Stay right here on Overtime.
Are you ready to flash that dazzling smile? Well, look no further than Knoxville Smiles. Our experienced team is here to give you the care and attention you deserve. From routine checkups and cleanings to advanced cosmetic treatments, we've got you covered. Say goodbye to dental worries and hello to a confident, radiant smile. Don't wait any longer. Schedule your appointment today and unlock the power of your smile. Call 865-539-1776 to schedule your appointment today, or just visit KnoxvilleSmiles.com.
Are you ready to play hard and work harder? Are you looking to take the next step in your career with a company who celebrates hard work and appreciates those who do it? Then it's time to join the movement at Axel Logistics. Axel is looking to expand their award-winning sales team with logistics consultants who are outgoing, ambitious, and thrive in a fast-paced environment. If that sounds like you, visit axellogistics.com to learn more. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Fan Run Radio. Axel Logistics, now is your time.
Your tax refund belongs to you, not an identity thief. Over $6 billion in tax refunds were flagged by the IRS for possible identity theft last year. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. They monitor and alert you to identity threats you'd miss on your own, even if you're careful with your personal information. And if you do become a victim of tax-related identity fraud, LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists ready to help solve your identity theft issue. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Let LifeLock help protect your financial info, so all you have to worry about is what you do with your tax refund. Go to LifeLock.com, save up to 25% off your first year. The promo code is HERD, promo code H-E-R-D, to save up to 25% off your first year. LifeLock.com, identity theft protection starts here.
Are you tired of looking at that piece of furniture that is worn down but you don't want to get rid of it? Go see our friends at Sun Upholstery and Fabric. Locally and family owned and operated with over 67 years of combined experience. Located at 8913 Oak Ridge Highway. Give them a call today at 865-237-3272 or visit them online at FabricSun.com. That's FabricSUN.com, and be sure to tell Stan that you heard about him right here on Fan Run Radio.
CC on that beat.
All right, back here on Overtime. Should I really even start? When we hit all these bets, we'll put our money in the grave. How about that?
Hey, I'll take it with me.
All right, time for our best bets of the night. I'll begin with Duke -5.5, taking on the North Carolina State Wolfpack. Rivalry game. But Duke's a superior offense and superior efficiency-wise offensively. Combined with their robust defense, I think it's too much. Even though they're on the road in a hard environment, I just think Duke is too much in this one. I'm taking the 5.5.
Baylor -6.5 tonight at home against the Texas Longhorns. Their statement win against Kansas at home on Saturday. Quick turnaround, but a streaky Texas team coming into an environment that is going to be absolutely rocking tonight after a huge win. A big momentum spot here for Baylor to kind of ride that momentum they get from the win off Kansas and come into this one and get another big win. I like them -6.5 tonight against the Longhorns.
I've also got Duke -5.5 at NC State. You know, Filipowski is coming on his revenge tour after his quote-unquote injury from the court storming at Wake Forest. And, Wolfpack is I've got them lined up to fall to yet another in-state rival. They lost to North Carolina over the weekend. So second time losing to an in-state rival in a three-day span.
Yeah, I saw a tweet this weekend. It said DeMar Hamlin, Alex Smith, and Kyle Filipowski, guys that have come back from big injuries.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
all right, my best bet is Texas plus 7.5. Sorry, guys. Texas lives inside the paint, and Baylor is 238th in opposing two-point percentage. Now, Baylor has been trying out a 1-3-1, a new-look zone for them, but I think Texas has the guard play to be able to get by that. I think it's just too many points here. Texas is a hot and cold team, but they need to win these games, especially for tournament seeding and the Big 12 tournament. They're looking to try and figure out or at least finish above 500 in conference play opportunity tonight, 7.5 Texas.
Only one more for me tonight, not a really heavy college basketball slate, so I'll go to the NBA. The Milwaukee Bucks, minus 3.5 tonight against the LA Clippers, a team we've talked about on here before. Listen, Milwaukee is finding something here under Doc Rivers. Several straight wins, big win over the like huge margin win over the Hornets, I think by 38, beat the Sixers by 21, coming off some wins against some playoff teams. And tonight they get the Clippers at home, a great test. But they're on their home floor, and they've really found some momentum here, especially defensively. I think they've started to kind of lock it down a little bit more, closer to what we're used to out of a Milwaukee Bucks team, at least in their most recent form. So they welcome L.A. tonight. I think they'll cover 3.5 and continue to make this new look team under Doc Rivers work.
I'm also going Baylor minus 6.5 to match you there, Dawson. They're still the only team in the NCAA that's got six players averaging 10 or more points, pretty much 11 or more points at this point. And, you know, coming off a big win against Kansas and going to be looking for revenge against Texas. Lost by 2 points last time in Austin. So going to be having some revenge on the mind. I think they're going to take it to them tonight.
All right, those are best bets of the night. Duke minus 5.5 for me. Texas plus 7.5. The guys have Baylor minus 6.5. You also
and Bucks minus 3.5. Bucks
and minus, I also had Duke minus 5.5.
All right, those are our best bets of the night. We'll see you on the other side. We'll head to the phones and talk college basketball weekend recap right here on Overtime.